a broadcast service of City College and the San Diego Community College District. This is Jazz FM 88.3 KSDS San Diego. I'm Dave Drexler with Inside Art. Support for Inside Art comes from the members of San Diego's Jazz 88.3. This week on Inside Art, as the year comes to a close, we remember some of the extraordinary talents we've encountered who passed away during 2024, including legendary saxophonist, composer, and bandleader Benny Golson, Brazilian superstar Sergio Mendes, and tabla master and global music ambassador Zakir Hussain. We begin with beloved poet, author, and activist Nikki Giovanni, who joined us in 2022 with the release of The Gospel According to Nikki Giovanni. This gospel-infused jazz collaboration with saxophonist Javon Jackson featured many of Giovanni's favorite gospel, jazz, and blues songs of her youth. And I asked Nikki about the crucial role her mother played in shaping her appreciation for jazz.
My mother was a big jazz fan, and my second book, which was called Black Judgment, and that was JUDGE/MENT. It was not a mistake. And when I was publishing, and I published that myself, I thought, oh, I'll do something. I was living in New York. Mommy lived in, of course, Cincinnati. And I thought, well, we'll invite Mommy up to come and be a part. We'll have a book party. And then I thought, well, Mommy loves jazz. And what's the biggest jazz nightclub actually in New York is going to be Birdland. So I went down to Birdland was down at that particular point. And I went down to Birdland and I met Harold Logan. And I'm sitting there talking to Mr. Logan. And I said, because that's when in New York, the clubs were closed on Sunday. And I said, I'd like to have a book party at Birdland on Sunday. And Harold Logan is looking at me like, whoa. And he says, well, you know, what are you going to pay me? And I said, oh, Mr. Logan, I don't have any money. I'm a poet, you know. And he just looked at me like, you know, you must be crazy. And he said, OK, I'll tell you what. If you bring me 100 people, you can have the club, 99 people, and you'll owe me $500. And I said, well, that's wonderful. And I stood up and shook his hand. I walked back upstairs and then it dawned on me. I had just shaken the hand of a gangster.
Welcome to the New York Jazz scene.
A lovely man, though. Oh, I loved him. I mean, we miss Mr. Logan and we miss people like that. And I was able to. I was very fortunate. I did work very hard to make sure that we got that. But the line started. That's when Birdland was at 42nd. And right above us was the New York Times. And the New York Times started to see people gather. And then people gathered, and then the line turned. And they finally sent a reporter down to say, what are you all here for? And the people answered, we're here for Black Judgment. So you can see where that's going to go. The New York Times is like, oh, my God, what's going on? What's going on? And it was a wonderful thing. And we got the second art front. The New York Times is divided into two sections, and we got the extra section. And that was really wonderful. I've always loved jazz. And I've been teasing Javon because it's true. I'm into space now. I think the galaxy is so wonderful. And I keep reminding him, if I had to go into space, what would I need? What sound would I need? And of course, you'd need a saxophone. That would be the one sound that whatever life form is in space, they would respond to, because the saxophone is so comforting. So I'm telling, you know, Javon, well, we'll end up going into galaxy, and he let me sing. And so I really appreciate that, because I can't sing. But I wanted very much to sing Night Song. And so Javon was like, okay. But you see his arrangement, as you can hear, it's just a beautiful arrangement.
Summer. Not a bit of breeze. Neon signs are shining through the tired trees. Lovers walking to and fro. Everyone has someone and a place to go.
As I say, I'm not a singer, I'm just a poet. But I wanted that now song to come out. Listen, Where Do I Belong? Because that's a song that Nina constantly asked. That was a question that she constantly asked. Where do I belong?
I exist in your imagination. I exist in your heart. I pop up in front of your windshield when you barely miss that little squirrel. I am laughing at you in the grocery store when you can't remember what you need. I am singing to you when you are restless in your sleep. I am the sprite when you take your shower. I exist in your fingertips when you touch your lips in surprise, when you touch yourself in your dreams. Clearly, unacknowledged, certainly unappreciated, perhaps even unwanted, I nonetheless exist.
That's iconic poet, author, and activist Nikki Giovanni with an excerpt from Javon and Nikki Go to the Movies, her second collaboration with saxophonist Javon Jackson, released last August. I'm Dave Drexler, and this week Inside Art is honoring some of our legendary guests and visitors over the years who passed away during 2024. Among those, saxophonist and bandleader Benny Golson was a towering figure in jazz, playing and composing a string of enduring standards as a founding member of the Jazz Messengers, the Jazz Tet with Art Farmer, and many others. Back in 2007, Golson headlined one of KSTS's Jazz Live concerts, and he sat down then with our Vince Outlaw to share some of his remarkable moments in music and the story behind his feature film debut in Steven Spielberg's The Terminal, starring Tom Hanks.
It would have never happened had Steven Spielberg not called me, but he called me and asked me, could I participate in his new film with a small speaking role with Tom Hanks? I didn't have any idea what it was. And I told him, yes, of course. And we shot it in Montreal. But before I got there, he called me and said, what kind of piano? He said, I'm creating a nightclub scene for you. And it was an old airplane, abandoned airplane hangar. And he said, what kind of piano would you like? Now, I had never met him, and I didn't know what he was about. I said, a Steinway 12-foot grand. And when I got there, it was there. Usually, they'll have a trailer for the musicians. He had a trailer for each one of us to kill for. I told my wife, wouldn't it be great if we could take this trailer back to 96th Street and live in it?
And so how was the experience of making a movie? Was it the first movie you had been in?
The very first. And my wife was in it too. She was one of the people sitting at the table, you know. And I didn't know what it was about until I got there, because he sent me a script, and it was like a screen test, which I did in New York. And I did it, and they said, oh, great. But they saw the look of concern on my face, and they said, well, what's wrong? I said, well, that's not exactly the way a musician would say it. So they did it over, and I did it that way, and they sent it to him, and he said, great. But the picture was about the photograph taken in 57, I think it was, with many musicians on it, and I happened to be on there, and Tom Hanks was trying to get my autograph throughout the film. That's what it was all about, because his father had been a jazz fan and gotten everybody's autograph, and his father died. And his father had gotten everybody's autograph except Benny Golson's. And to complete it, he wanted to get my autograph, which happened at the end of the film. Oh, but everything leading up to that, it was, you'll have to see it.
Let's do Killer Joe. It worked all right last night, so we'll try. Oh, just, yes.
You are Benny Golson.
Yeah, yes, I am, yeah.
Benny Golson, I am Viktor Navorsky. I am from Krakowia. My father, Dmitry Sinov Dvorsky, was a great, great fan of your music.
Oh, jazz fan, fantastic.
Yes, yes. Would you sign your name, please?
Oh, well, I tell you, can I do it a little later? We have to get started now. Just a minute.
Oh, I will wait.
Okay.
You ended up playing with Art Blakey, and yes. I had read an interesting story that I wanted to kind of get your thoughts on about how when you met Art, he had a band, and you in particular, you felt like he could be doing much better.
Absolutely.
And so you worked with him to put together a new band, and the Jazz Messengers, you know, took off from there.
Yeah.
What was it about Art Blakey, you know, that made you think that he could be doing better? And did he, at that time, did he already have a reputation as a great drummer? And what do you think was happening there?
Yes, he already had a reputation, but he wasn't doing anything to advance it, to take it further. And he wasn't making much money. And what he had was the axiomatic talent. He had that. And he wasn't parlaying it to anything. And I said to him, you should be a millionaire the way you play. And I said a few other things, and then it surprised me what he said to me, because I was a nobody. He said, can you help me? I couldn't believe he said it. And I couldn't believe what I answered him with. Yes, if you do everything I tell you. He said, what do I do? I said, get a new band. Oh, boy, that was something.
So you took control.
Oh, he gave it to me. Oh, yeah. So I got Lee and Bobby Timms and Jimmy Merritt. And wrote some new stuff for him. Blues March came about because of him. I said, you've got to have something that people can identify with you rather than playing a drum solo at the end of a tune, something that you begin with at the beginning, like you did with Straight No Chaser with Monk. I said, but you've done everything there is to do. And then I thought, except the march, and then we both started laughing. And then I stopped laughing. I said, oh, wait a minute, the march. And he looked at me and said, you've got to be kidding. He didn't want to do it. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, let's try it. Let me go home tonight and see what I can write. And I came up with this thing called Blues March. And he played it like nobody ever played it.
Mm.
Yeah, he made it his own.
Can you tell me then a little bit about the history of the Jazz Tet?
There have been
a couple incarnations of the Jazz Tet, the original one,
right.
And then one, I think, in the 80s. Tell us about how the first Jazz Tet came together.
Well, I met Art Farmer when he was playing with Lionel Hampton. I joined Lionel Hampton. I didn't stay very long, but during the time I was in the band, I met Art Farmer, who was playing trumpet with him. Quincy Jones was still there playing trumpet. Who else was there? Clifford Brown was there. Gigi Grice. Monk Montgomery was playing electric bass. Jimmy Cleveland was playing trombone. And after I met Art, well, when I heard his sound, I realized that his sound was different. Such a beautiful sound. And then eventually he left the band, and I didn't stay very long. And we were thrown together in circumstances sometimes, different recordings and commercials. And we liked the way each other played. And I thought, well, there's lots of quartets and quintets, but there's not really any sextet going. I'd like to put a sextet together, and I'd like to have Art Farm as my trumpet player. So I called him one day and said, Art, I'm thinking about putting a sextet together, and I'd like for you to be my trumpet player. And when I said that, he burst out laughing. I couldn't imagine, what the heck is he laughing at? And when he stopped, he says, you know what? I was thinking about putting together a sextet, and you were going to be my saxophone player. So we both started laughing. I said, well, come on by the house and apartment, and we'll talk about it. So he got his twin brother as the bass player, Addison Farmer, whom I used to confuse at the beginning,
mm-hmm.
and Dave Bailey, the drummer. They played together with Jerry Mulligan. I was going to get the trombone player and the piano player. I got Curtis Fuller, and I told him about a young piano player in Philadelphia that he had never heard of, named McCoy Tyner. And he said, well, can he play? I said, yes. I played with him, and I said, he's fantastic. And that's how the first Jazz Tet came together.
What are some of the things that you're looking forward to doing as you move forward and continue on playing jazz?
I would like to think that I've got one foot in the present and one foot in the darkness of the future, trying to discover things that are there awaiting my discovery of them. Some people say to me, what is the best tune you've ever written? What is your favorite tune? And my answer is always the same. I haven't written it yet. You know, creativity never retires. It goes on and on.
The inimitable Benny Golson, recorded in 2007 with Jazz 88.3's Vince Outlaw. You can hear Vince's full interview with Benny Golson online at vinceoutlaw.com. I'm Dave Drexler with Inside Art, this week paying tribute to some of the great artists we've met over the years who died during 2024. Coming up, we remember a pair of musical icons who expanded the language of jazz and pop through their own distinctive cultural traditions. Stay with us for archival interviews with Brazilian music legend Sergio Mendes and Indian tabla master Zakir Hussain as Inside Art continues here on San Diego's Jazz 88.3. Funding for Inside Art comes from the members of Jazz 88.3, where your support brings the joy and history of jazz and all of the arts to San Diego. To become a member, visit jazz88.org/donate. I'm Dave Drexler with Inside Art, this week remembering some of the extraordinary artists we've featured over the years who passed away during 2024. Back in 2013, Brazilian superstar Sergio Mendes joined us to talk about his new album of totally reimagined Sergio classics performed by contemporary Brazilian and American pop stars, bringing his beloved songs to a new generation of listeners around the world. You know, Sergio, one of your great gifts, in my opinion, is your ability to adapt and use different vocalists, different instrumentalists throughout your career, yet you maintain the integrity of your own sound. It's always a Sergio Mendes sound.
Thank you. Well, I'm very curious. I love to learn new things, and I've been very fortunate to have a chance to work with some wonderful musicians and singers all my life, and I had different formations during the years. I had instrumental sounds and vocal sounds, and so the new album, it's as you said, I have guests from the United States, from Brazil, a lot of wonderful musicians and singers.
Can I take you back to the early days in Brazil, though, growing up? And you were classically trained as a youngster, right?
Yes, I was. I learned classical. I took classical lessons when I was 7 years old. And then about 12, 13, I heard this jazz record, which was a Dave Brubeck record. And I fell in love with that music and started listening to a lot of jazz. And then this is like the moment when Bossa Nova was starting in Brazil, in Rio de Janeiro. I was playing in some clubs in Rio and working with was great musicians at the time, composer Antonio Carlos Jobim and making records and traveling all over Brazil. That was a wonderful moment of Brazilian music in those days.
And as it's happening, you probably realize how wonderful it is. It's got to stand out in a certain way while you're experiencing it.
Well, yeah, it is very special. People keep asking me, why is Brazilian music? I think it's a combination of things. I think we have a very diverse culture in Brazil. The Portuguese, they came in, and then we have the Africans that brought the wonderful rhythms, and then the French came in, the Dutch. So I think that diversity gives Brazil a very kind of special music, and it's sunny and it's happy, and people like to celebrate life, and it's a very unique and great melodies. I mean, for me, that's the most important thing. It's a country that had produced through the years incredible melodies, and I'm a melody guy, and on the end of the day, it's all about the great songs. It's about the girl from Ipanema, Desafinado, Mais Que Nada. That's what prevails, is that great, great song.
And speaking of Mais Que Nada, this was the first popular song worldwide that was sung in Portuguese, right?
Yeah, the only time that a song actually in Portuguese became a,
not since.
It's all over the world, actually.
Now, when you heard that it was Jorge Ben who originally wrote that. I listened to the original and, you added so much that was different about it.
Well, the arrangement, my arrangement is totally different than his arrangement, so I. But I heard the song when I was working this club in Brazil, in Rio. I used to work at this club called the Bottles Bar. And one night he comes in and starts playing. And his music was very different than, it was very kind of syncopated and, a lot of great rhythms. He had a different kind of a guitar playing, was, although was at the same period as the bossa nova, but his music was a little more urban.
Mas que nada sai da minha frente, eu quero passar, pois o samba está animado, que eu quero é sambar.
And again, I would say the melody is so simple and so catchy. And I mean, I play that song, it's like the national anthem in Japan, you know, people sing along with you everywhere in the world. That song is very magical. And it's very simple and very catchy. And the interesting thing, when I recorded in 66, and first of all, I never expect to have a song in Portuguese being a hit all over the world. So 40 years later, when I did the album was Will I Am, he said, why don't we do Mais Que Nada again? And I said, how are we going to do Mais Que Nada again? He said, let's do it in a different way. So we did it, you know, a different arrangement, of course, but the song was there.
Yeah.
And again, you know, the song was a huge hit again all over. There was a whole new generation that never heard that song. So it is amazing.
When you go back to the Brazil 66 era, you had a very distinctive sound. And, you know, particularly the vocals, you had a certain vocal style of having the two lead female singers singing in unison. What was your thinking in that?
Well, it was just by, you know, trying different. I mean, I had a band in Brazil with two trombones, and people say, why are you using two trombones? I don't know. I like to experiment things and sounds very much. I don't have any formulas. I don't have any. So those things happen by chance, you know, and it just sounded right, and it was a beautiful sound, and that was it.
And then adapting some of these great popular songs that you did with Brazil 66, I'm just kind of curious, what struck you about certain songs that became recorded there?
Well, that's a different story. I like to, I like to use the term reinterpreting. You know, it's like really making a new arrangement out of something that's a classic. I mean, you get a song like, Fool on the Hill was at the same time I had this idea of doing Fool on the Hill in a samba way, in a Brazilian way. And so that's why, you know, it sounded different than the Beatles version, I hope.
Sees the sun.
The idea is like, you know, if there's a great song, you can make that song. I mean, look how many different recordings you had of the great Cole Porter songs, by the, you know, from Sinatra to Ella Fitzgerald to Sarah Vaughan, and all had to do was different arrangements of the same song. So I think, you know, if there's a song out there that I can turn it around and make it something unique and fresh and, you know, kind of exciting, and that's why I like to do that.
If I can take you back just a little bit in our closing moments to your jazz years working with Cannonball Adderley and Art Farmer, maybe you can talk a little bit about maybe Cannonball in particular, how that happened, how you guys got together.
It was a wonderful, wonderful, another wonderful magic encounter. The first time I came to the United States was in November of 1962. They had a bossa nova concert at Carnegie Hall. And Jobim came, João Gilberto, and I had the band at the time called the Bossa Rio, and the instrumental band. So arriving at New York and Carnegie Hall, you probably can imagine, I'm like 19, 20 years old, and I couldn't believe it. I just was pinching myself, so I can't believe it, I'm here. And then I start meeting, you know, Stan Getz and Dizzy Gillespie, my big idols, you know, at the time, and so we did the concert, which went great, and so the following day I went to Birdland to hear Cannonball was working there, and so I met him, and he said, why don't you come and play something with us? I was really shaking, of course, so I went to the piano. We played a couple of songs together. He loved Brazilian music, and he said, why don't we do an album together? So he invited me to do an album with him. He was an amazing person, beautiful human being, fantastic saxophonist, and loved, you know, those melodies and Brazilian music, and we became friends for, you know, for years to come. You know, he used to come to L.A. and I saw him. So for me, was that a very, very important moment of my life.
Sergio Mendes, recorded in 2013 here on Inside Art. I'm Dave Drexler, honoring some of our show's most distinguished guests over the years who passed away during 2024. Just last week, we learned of the death of Grammy-winning tabla master and perennial Downbeat Magazine Percussionist of the Year, Zakir Hussain, who in the 1970s began a groundbreaking career of cross-genre collaborations, fusing the musical traditions of his native India with scores of Western jazz, rock, and classical artists of every variety. With Mahavishnu Orchestra guitarist John McLaughlin, Zakir would find his musical soulmate and create the band Shakti, which last year celebrated their 50th anniversary as an ensemble. Back in 2017, Hussain reflected on the beginnings of his genre-bending journey into jazz and improvisational music with John McLaughlin.
Oh my God. I mean, he's one of my, you know, mentors. I mean, I was at a point where I'd just come from India and I was working in Ali Akbar Khan's school here in San Francisco area, in Marin. And I just went to do a workshop, which the Ali Akbar School sent me out to New York to do. There used to be a place called House of Musical Tradition in Manhattan. And he arranged this workshop that I had to do. And in walks this gentleman who wanted some vocal lessons and in North Indian music. And I'm a tabla player, no clue on how to teach vocal. So at that point, I said to him, "But I can't really help you. I can tell you a little bit about the scales, but mainly in rhythmic ideas, I can tell you some compositions and patterns." And then I did that, and that was it. Hello, goodbye. And then I came back, and about a month later, I got a call, and the man said, "Hello, this is John, and I'm in the Bay Area and playing at Winterland. And would you like to come and enjoy the concert?" And I said, "Sure." So I went, and that's when it hit me, you know, Mahavishnu Orchestra on stage, and like who it was that I was trying to teach rhythms to. It was kind of a, you know, me bringing coals to Newcastle kind of thing. But it was amazing to watch Billy and John and Goodman and all those guys just hammer and stuff, mixing it up and doing that, and my jaw dropped. And the next day, John said, "Can I meet Ali Akbar Khan?" So I brought him to Ali Akbar Khan's home. And there, when we were sitting in the living room, Ali Akbar Khan says to John, "Would you play something for me?" So John, who had an acoustic guitar in the car with him, took it out and brought in and asked me to join him. And that's when we first played, was in Ali Akbar's living room. It all was like we were playing since we were born to it. And even though we were on different parts of the world, it didn't seem like our thoughts were different. The patterns came simultaneously to the both of us. The downbeat was arrived at together. It was just one of those moments where, you know, we were thinking of same things at the same time, and it was twins who were joined again together, and it felt very, you know, magical and special. And I think it may have hit John in the same way. And then a year later, he, with Shankar, El Shankar, asked me to come and join them and play in Southampton College, and the birth of Shakti happened.
Tabla maestro and global music ambassador Zakir Hussain, recorded in 2017 here on Inside Art. This special 2024 edition of Inside Art in Remembrance has been made possible with support from the members of Jazz 88.3. Replays and extended versions of every Inside Art broadcast are available online at jazz88.org/InsideArt. As we close another year, my deepest gratitude to all of our creative guests and to you for listening each week. For Jazz 88.3, this is Dave Drexler, wishing you a happy holiday season. Breaking Jazz is next.